That's our good friend Marv Levy, who was on the show on Monday talking about the interesting decision by J.P. Losman to risk getting a safety in the end zone. Dick Vermeil, we are so honored to have you. Are you fresh back from the West Coast?
Yes, I am. Yeah, all ready to go back to work.
I thought you were just working on the West Coast.
I was just working there, that's for sure. But I got home yesterday and just working around the ranch truck today.
Well, Coach, tell us about Invincible, the movie. I was able to see it a week and a half ago, and just it seemed to me that they made an effort to make it real. They didn't try to make Vince Papale's character into a five-time All-Pro player. They just talked about his personal journey as well, and the interaction with you and with your wife. To me, it seemed to convey the amount of respect that you have for your wife, and that was a heartwarming, I think, addition that gave it a real touch.
Well, I think they did as good a job as you can do with something that happened 30 years ago, you know. They took a three-month period of time in his life and made it into a movie, and I think they did a very, very good job. The story is true. Now, some of the details, you know, Nick, in training camp, you don't go home at night and go over to the neighborhood bar. You're in bed check at 11 o'clock, or you're in meetings all night and all that kind of
stuff.
Exactly. But for the most part, it was, I think, a very believable and realistic story, and most of it was all true.
Was it moving for you to relive those moments of your coming of age, if you will, in the NFL in Philadelphia?
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah, especially certain scenes in there and certain expressions that he used that I used to use as a younger coach. Yeah, it did touch me.
Do you think it's possible, Dick Vermeil, for the same kind of all-comers tryout? I remember George Allen did that, and they uncovered a guy named Herb Mulkey who hadn't played in college, who was a great returner for them for a brief period of time. Do you think today that scenario could be possible?
Yeah, I do. I still think it can happen. You know, it's rare, but, you know, Kurt Warner was rare. You know, and, of course, he had played college football, The time it took for him to finally get a real shot again and playing in the Arena League 3 years, going to the NFL, EL. You know, I think there are more stories like that out there.
Coach Vermeil, one last question about the movie. When it came time to make that decision about Vince Papale, you know, the way they portrayed it in the film is that you're wondering, you want to go with a football guy, who is this guy, and your wife in the movie says, hey, remember, it's all about character, not just your character, but your character in the moment. Was there any truth to that, the way that decision was made?
Well, you know, I think that was all part of the decision-making process. Dick Corey, my wide receiver coach, Ken Iman, my special teams coach, they were all emotionally involved in the decision and played, you know, ultimately it comes down to me, but they all influenced me positively, yes.
You know, to me, what it does in the movie, it remembers a time when there was a little bit less of a business and the entertainment of the NFL and just the pure love of the sport. And all of these fans that, you know, had endured, like Jets fans and some other teams, you know, the losing seasons, yet they still love their team. Let's move on to Monday Night Football, Coach. I have talked to, if not one, I've talked to 20 people that have said, as much as they think Tony Kornheiser so far has done a good job, that they're as much or more excited about seeing you back on the Monday Night crew as well. Tell us what's your role going to be on Monday Night Football in the doubleheaders this year.
No, that was just it. That was the only, they only have one doubleheader, and that's the only game I'll do. And, you know, I had fun. I didn't feel real comfortable. You know, I hadn't done a ball game, Nick, in 10 years from a broadcasting standpoint, and names and numbers didn't flash like they used to when I was 10 years younger. But I think if I got going again and did some games, that would all come back to me. But I had fun. The people, producer Tim Corrigan was a great guy. Brad Nessler is truly a pro. And, you know, I have such a great relationship with Ron Jaworski. We had fun together.
Well, I'd like to say that it's obvious you have a chemistry with Ron Jaworski, who I think is probably the best prepared. There are many well-prepared guys covering the NFL, but Ron Jaworski, his ability to translate the intricacies of the game into layman's terms is unparalleled. And together you guys are a tremendous pair, and I do hope that they'll consider finding ways for you to work together more. In the Raiders game itself, Coach, you said this was one of the worst performances by the Raiders. Here's Tom Flores from last week talking about that offensive line and what at least they were trying to do with Robert Gallery.
Well, they're hoping it will. You know, they drafted Robert Gallery. You know, they took him second pick in the draft. They drafted him to play left tackle, and it's taken 3 years to get there. But that's where he belongs. He's having a little trouble with the speed, which they all do when they come out of college. And he'll see a lot of speed guys at that corner. But if they can get their offensive line and keep it healthy, they're going to be pretty good. They're going to have a pretty formidable offensive line. But
unfortunately, that doesn't look the way it's turning out. What is your take on Oakland? And if you were sent in there, like a Dan Reeves was into Houston last year to turn things around, what's the first thing you would do? Because there are obviously some very complex and deep-seated problems there.
Well, I think, first off, they've got to be able to incorporate some quick passing game, you know, and protections that allow you to help another player when he's having a problem. You chip on a Merriman when he's over there singled up on an offensive lineman. These kinds of things, getting rid of the ball quicker. You know, you remember in the third quarter when they dumped the ball quick out there on Hitch to Moss twice. He advanced the ball, made good plays, and broke a tackle, ran down the sideline. You know, so they've got to do those kind of things. And I think there's some good coaches there, and they'll get their problems ironed out. But to be confronted with the likes of a San Diego Charger front seven initially right off the bat made it really, really tough on them.
Mike Ditka was talking about how also those deep drops was just playing into the hands of that San Diego rush led by Sean Merriman.
Yeah, I think that was true, but I think also the running back's trying to pick up Merriman so deep off the line of scrimmage. You know, if you're going to pick up Merriman with a running back, you better get up there and meet him about 2 yards across the, you know, before just not 5-6 yards deep, because he's just too powerful.
He's got too much head of steam going.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah.
Coach, the situation with Jerry Porter, who said in the paper today, he's quoted as saying, hey, I wasn't even paying attention to the game. Here's a quote also about that.
Well, it seems to be not as big an issue with Art, anyway, as it's built up to be. You know, Art feels that if he works hard, he plays hard, you know, you don't have to invite the guy to dinner and have a, you know, have a iced tea with him or something like that. But Jerry Porter obviously didn't like some of the things, or some of the, he had his, you know, his third coach since he's been here, actually his fourth coach since he's been here. He started with John Gruden, so sometimes that gets a little frustrated, and he was frustrated. Very talented guy. Hopefully he doesn't want to be the next Terrell Owens.
That's, of course, our friend Tom Flores, who knows the Raiders, covers them on the Raiders radio network. That's where their talent lies. They've got two absolutely outstanding wide receivers. What can they do to save this season, which, you know, still has 15 games to go?
Well, like I said, they're going to have to use some protections that help people and be prepared. Don't be surprised by people that are good pass rushers. They're going to have to run the ball well and force them to defense the run some, and not get in third and long situations. And they're going to have to have move the quarterback pocket maybe a little bit and that kind of stuff. But there's enough talent for them to get better and maybe get better quickly. This, you saw how the defense got so much better in the second half than they were in the first half. Boom, they adjusted and off to work and did a better job. I think the offense can do some of that, but boy, they better get on it, because they're going into Baltimore Ravens this week, and that's going to be a really tough situation for them.
And we've talked about that, the revitalization when Baltimore has found, you know, the golden rainbow, if you will, the pot at the end of the rainbow with Steve McNair, the leadership that they have missed, the kind of quarterback that provides a physical and experience and the leadership itself. It seems like they've found what they've been looking for probably 4 or 5 years.
Well, repeat that. I didn't get that, Nick.
Steve McNair is what they've been looking for all these years. They've been looking for a quarterback that can get the job done, who's a leader also on the field.
No question. And I mean, he's got the physical tools to back up his leadership. You know, and now the defense is healthy. I think they're going to be a very good football team. And when you go in there and play, it is really tough.
And they've got an aging defense, but you know, Ray Lewis, it seems like they've got a nice combination of fresh young talent as well. So Baltimore, to me, is one of our picks, a team that didn't make the playoffs last year that has a real good shot this year. Coach, let's shift to a team you know really well, the Kansas City Chiefs. We had Sam Huff on the show yesterday talking about, you know, the rule with regard to protecting the quarterback.
Well, you know, those and that's an official's call, okay? And you're not allowed to hit anybody with your helmet anymore. You know, if they had those rules when we played, half the guys would be thrown out of the Hall of Fame. You know, and they're trying to take as much defense as they can out of the game. I didn't think that that was a bad hit. I mean, you know, you don't want to see anybody get hurt. Trent Green's a great guy. But when he slid, he didn't do a belly whopper. You know, he just slid. And he, until the whistle blows, you're fair game, supposedly, in this game. I don't know. I hit a lot of people. I knocked Don Meredith out. You know, I knocked a few quarterbacks out in my time.
He did. But, Coach, as you look at this team, the Chiefs team, and without Willie Roaf, you experienced it last year. With Roaf in, you had a very effective running game. What's going to happen for this Chiefs team, especially without Trent Green?
I think they'll come along, and, you know, they're going to play as, you know, it's tough to go to Denver. We never beat Denver one time in 5 years up there. So it's tough to go up there without your starting quarterback. We went up there with him and got beat. And it'll be very, very tough. But the defense is better. I don't know how good Denver is. They did not play real well against the Rams. But, you know, the hit on Trent, the quarterback in a slide mode is protected. That's all there is to it.
He is.
Now, did the kid try to hurt him? No, he didn't. Did he put his helmet in him? No, he didn't. But he hit him, and that's a 15-yard penalty. That's how it is today. That's just how it is today. And I've seen it called when it's absolutely ridiculous. But that's how it is today, Nick. And there should have been a 15-yard penalty called. And that's all. He shouldn't be fined. He didn't do anything deliberate. The way I understand it, when he goes into the slide mode, there is no excuse for contact.
There's an interesting irony in it, too, Coach, that you have a guy coming back from a major injury, an injury that may have prevented the Cincinnati Bengals from going to the Super Bowl themselves. They're playing with a bit of a chip on their shoulders as well. They are one of my picks, along with Carolina, who had a poor game opening day. Tell me about what you see in Cincinnati. Carson Palmer strikes me as a guy who's about to take it to the very top, or one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, plus they improved their defense. Their defense was not very good and hasn't been very good. Their offense has been outstanding. They've done a real good job with that, and their special teams have been good. Now their defense is better. And, you know, they played well in the preseason games when their starters were playing without their starting quarterback. So I look for them to be a very tough football team and a good football team. They've got to stay healthy. Keep Carson Palmer healthy. You know, he's already proved what he can do as a young player, and I think they're going to be tough.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Dick Vermeil, and we're going to be joined by Seth Joyner, a guy who played on those Eagles a little bit after Dick Vermeil made his mark with Philadelphia. We're going to talk about the interesting decision and the phenomenon of this Deion Branch story, what it does for Seattle, and what it says about New England, which until now has been one of the best-run organizations in football. We'll be right back with Dick Vermeil, the newest edition, back in the fold in television covering football, and Seth Joyner in just a minute.
Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Welcome back to Head Games Radio on Sirius Satellite, Sports Byline USA, American Forces Network. Want to give a shout-out to all those soldiers in Iraq that listen to this show and give our love to you guys. We are blessed to have two guys who got famous in Philadelphia, not only Dick Vermeil, who had a movie made about him and the story of Vince Papale we talked about earlier in the show, but also All-Pro Seth Joyner, who's one of those rare guys, unlike myself, who got a chance to get a Super Bowl ring at the end of his career. Seth Joyner, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Hey, Seth, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Dick, good to talk to you, man.
Nice to hear your voice.
Hey, Coach Vermeil, when you started in your career, what would it have been like on those Philadelphia? You had some pretty good linebackers, but you had to revamp that team. Then a guy named Seth Joyner comes along who is about 6'4", he's about 255, he's fast, he's strong, he's agile. Kind of a new type of linebacker, huh?
Well, yeah, no question. Actually, when I went back into coaching at the Rams, I brought Seth in there and talked to him about coming to the St. Louis Rams. You know, outstanding player, outstanding person, great influence on other football players with leadership skills and just high character guy. You know, a true credit to the National Football League.
Yeah, all I can say is Seth Joyner and Dick Vermeil. I'm happy that Seth's a nice guy because he's still intimidating, man. We are happy to have you on the show, Seth. Hey, listen, we got a quote from Marv Levy from Monday's show about that New England game. Before we talk about Deion Branch, let's talk about the decision with J.P. Losman, a young emerging quarterback. Here's what Marv Levy had to say about that situation. The score is tied, 17-17, just a few minutes left. He's in his end zone.
Well, it was a tie score. We're deep in our own end zone, and we gambled. He was sacked a foot or two into the end zone, and that was the margin of the game. I don't fault the call. JP said he did evade, and he's very evasive in terms of his footwork. He evaded the first rusher, and bang, he was right into the second one. So it's a difference. You learn from it. We think he's made great progress over a year ago. He did some very good things during the game. We're not happy having lost it, but we're going back to work, and there were some good signs at least. There's a long season ahead, and we'll focus on it.
That's Marv Levy. Dick, as you look at that situation, how do you coach your quarterback to keep that internal clock in his head? Because if it, as Len Dawson said on Monday, if it's a 3-second clock normally, don't you think it'd be about a 2-second clock in that situation?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, sometimes when you're younger, the awareness of the clock is not just automatic. It's not instinctively to ingrained yet in a. You know, the game for these guys, he played some pretty good football last year and has made some plays, but in that situation, I think he just sort of lost not only the time factor, but where he was on the field for a split second. Because it's obvious as you watch the replay, he tried to get back on foot line, you know, but he didn't make it.
And that kind of puts you in a situation where just the trade-off is so great. But what about Buffalo as a team? We made some picks this preseason about the teams that didn't make the playoffs last year. We definitely believe Philadelphia is a team that's going to take it to the next level, get back to the playoffs this year. Minnesota, which showed it Monday night. San Diego, which showed it Monday night as well. Maybe even possibly, not at the same level. Detroit has a shot as well. Arizona has a shot. What about Buffalo? How are they looking to you at this point?
Well, they're obviously improved to play New England as well as they did. New England's a good football team. They always will be with Bill Belichick there. Their down year is 9-7. You know, 9-7. But I think that it's too early to say how they're going to be. You know, but they showed at least in the opener they're extremely competitive and probably a better football team. Last year, on defense, they were not a very good football team. You know, nowhere close to being a playoff team, and obviously they've improved that area. And now with the offense picking up, they had good wide receivers. They have a good running back. They could be a competitive team.
And McGahee's a real threat. Getting back to that situation, when you're the quarterback and it's a tie game and you have a shot to pull off what it would have been a significant upset on the road as well. As a linebacker, let's say you're playing for New England, Seth Joyner, what's going through your head in terms of what you're looking for and what you think the mistake was with regard to what J.P. Losman should have done?
Well, I mean, obviously as a linebacker, my main concern is, you know, A, not giving up a big play in that situation, putting them in a situation where they can kick the field goal and win the game. Secondly, keeping guys in bounds, making sure that you keep the clock running. You know, Dick made some very, very valid points as far as, you know, his clock management and things of that nature. But, you know, if you know J.P. Losman, you know that he's a very, very competitive guy. And while he may have lost, you know, awareness of what was going on with the clock, I also believe that his competitive spirit probably got the best of him in that situation. You've got to understand, sometimes you need to just go ahead into overtime and take your chances in that situation instead of trying to do a little too much to win the game. And I can guarantee you, you know, he lost track of his play clock, so to speak, in his mind because he was trying to wait for something to open up, trying to make that play, and in doing so, you know, he gets sacked in the end zone, and those 2 points are the difference between that win and that loss. But, you know, you also got to realize he's a young guy who hasn't played a whole lot, too, and I think that situations like that, you know, young quarterbacks have to go through because that's how they learn.
Well, let's shift to the other team, the team on the other end of it, which is the New England Patriots, and the handling of the Deion Branch situation. They don't have a wide receiver, I believe, that can stretch the field for them now. They've lost a guy that was one of their big game players in the Super Bowl as well, and it seemed as if the rest of the players on the Patriots did not expect this to happen. What went wrong in New England, Seth Joyner?
Well, I think you have to understand that the New England Patriots are a three-time Super Bowl winning football team within the last, 6 years here. So, I think sometimes organizations put themselves in a position where they have to send a message. You've seen it with the Philadelphia Eagles and different players at different times. I think that there's a way as a player that you have to go about doing things so that you don't force an organization's hand, because I don't care whether it's an organization or whether, it's a Fortune 500 company. They are not going to let one employee force their hand and make them do something that they don't want to do. There could have been a much more diplomatic way of going about this, but obviously Deion felt that, he had to handle the situation this way. And I think because he took it public, and the fact that he basically said, either give me more money, sign me to a long-term, a better deal, or I'm not coming to camp, he kind of put the team on the spot, and they had no other choice but to handle the situation the way that they did.
Here's Howard Balzer from yesterday's show talking about that same situation.
The thing with Branch, Nick, is that here's a situation where the Patriots made him a pretty representative offer. His agent, I put a lot of this at the feet of the agent. Last year Richard Seymour staged a little holdout, and that got done because it was done in quiet behind the scenes. His agent wasn't out there beating the drums and pleading his case, and here's Branch's agent talking about how the Patriots exploited him because he signed a 5-year contract instead of a 4-year contract when he was a rookie. Well, you know what? This agent had some other players that he signed to 5-year contracts too who weren't first-round picks, and you don't hear him crying about those guys.
That's Howard Balzer. Dick, how would you have handled this situation with Carl Peterson in Kansas City with a wide receiver who clearly you want to keep? It's a really difficult thing. Personalities get involved. The media gets involved. It's one of those things that makes it difficult for the head coach to focus on football and coaching.
Well, I think we probably would have handled pretty much like they handled it in New England. I would hope that we would have had a real good communication system going all along that would prevent it from getting it where it got. You know what I mean? Every organization is different, but I think every player always felt he could come into my office and sit down and talk about a problem, whether it be female problems, car problems, education problems, contract problems, agent problems, assistant coaching problems. They always felt that they could come in and visit, and I'd like to believe if that atmosphere existed, and he felt it existed with us in Kansas City, that he would come in and maybe you could solve the problem. And sometimes you can't, though. That's all there is to it.
What would you have done differently? In other words, would you have done as New England did and said, go ahead and shop the market? They had already made a very decent offer to him as well. Or, as you say, would you have simply done the same thing? Go ahead, shop the market, see what's out there.
I can't tell you. I really don't know. I didn't have that authority in Kansas City. Carl Peterson might very well have said, go ahead and shop and see what you can get.
All righty. Well, Coach, before we go, I thought we'd finish by looking at your old team, Philadelphia, with Seth Joyner, two guys that know a lot about that team. Here's Solomon Wilcox from last Wednesday talking about a team that I think really is back where they were 2 years ago, if not better.
I agree. I think they're one of those teams that did not make the playoffs last year that you could easily see them making the playoffs this year. I think it's just a tough and difficult road to try to win that division. The NFC East is a very difficult one to try to win. I have the Giants winning that division, but I do have the Eagles making it into the playoffs. And you're right, a healthy Donovan McNabb with a tremendously improved wide receiving core, Reggie Brown, and now you add Dante Stallworth, who appears going to be a starter on opening day for the Eagles. But they've got some other backup guys. Hank Basquet, a rookie from New Mexico, has come in and have performed very well during training camp. So they appear to be very well. The offensive and defensive line are as good as any team in the league. And when you know it, Nick, when you play well on offensive line and on your defensive line, the ability to put pressure on the quarterback without having to blitz, you're going to win a lot of games. And I think that's how this team looks, because I believe that they do have the best quarterback in the division with the most experience.
Dick Vermeil, quarterback and wide receiver, we talk about it time and again. Dante Stallworth indeed went and exploded for, I think, 141 yards, and he'd barely been with the team a couple weeks. Tell us about Philadelphia and where you see them fitting in throughout this season.
Well, I think they'll be very, very tough to beat. I think they're very good. First, good football teams always have good, big football players. The game, really, today is determined by the big people up front, both offensive line and defensive lines. The offensive line allows the quarterback to perform better and enhances the ability to make plays with the receivers downfield. The running game is better. The defensive line helps the linebackers play better. The defensive line can put pressure on the quarterback without taking risk in high-risk blitz packages. I look for them to really be deep into the playoffs, but I also think it's way too early to be talking playoffs about the National Football League teams anywhere. That's just game. Let the playoffs become a major concern and conversation piece from about the ninth game on.
Well, you know, we're going to start doing it from the first week on. That's just the way we do our jobs here, Coach. But listen, congratulations. America needs you back to hear your wisdom covering the sport, sir, and we really appreciate all that you've given to the sport. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Take care, Nick.